Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
Discover over 100 episodes of Bartholomew Town on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
So you're sort of the bureau, the news bureau for Northern Rhode Island.
Right.
That's a big responsibility.
Yeah, and we take it seriously. And if somebody comes in and wants to try competing, that's fine. Because we feel very confident where we're at. And it would be tough for somebody to do that as well as we do.
Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew, on today's episode. I sit down with managing editor of the Valley Breeze, Ethan Shorey. The Valley Breeze, an outstanding newspaper really covering several communities, and as you heard in that clip just a couple of seconds ago, the de facto news bureau in Northern Rhode Island, a regional powerhouse, if you will, on that hyper-local scale. Now, the paper was recently sold, so naturally there's some questions about its future. Hey, will it continue to be Northern Rhode Island-focused, or will it shift in new directions? So we'll keep an eye on all that, but for now, a fascinating conversation with Ethan Shorey about not only the Valley Breeze itself and operating a local newspaper in these times here, these challenging times, but also discussing Rhode Island, specifically Northern Rhode Island as a region, some of the economic development strategies that are being implemented there, some of the political happenings going on in that area. So continuing to examine the Blackstone River Valley and Northern Rhode Island here on the pod. And this time speaking with someone who really understands the lay of the land. So lots to get to today. Hopefully you're having an outstanding summer and enjoying this podcast today in beautiful weather, perhaps even from the beach. Support for Bartholomew Town comes from Lagunitas Brewing Company, helping to present Elmwood Songwriters Club, a recurring performance series featuring intimate sets by Rhode Island artists from a variety of communities, held at the Bartholomew Town Loft in the Elmwood neighborhood of Providence. And remember, you can support the podcast by subscribing, rating, and reviewing wherever you're listening right now. All right, without further ado, my conversation with managing editor of the Valley Breeze, Ethan Shorey.
Yeah, you provide excellent hyper-local coverage, and you put it in context that makes it feel like Northern Rhode Island, the Blackstone River Valley, kind of the general area you cover, is the center of the world, and that's where you want to be. But at the same time, it has the charm of a small town type newspaper.
Yep.
How have you found that balance of becoming a credible paper that is cited on a statewide and regional level? You know,
I think it's just knowing who we are and not trying to be something different. So, covering the stories that matter to people, where they are in their neighborhood, not ever trying to do like statewide news or national news, and just sticking with that no matter what.
Yeah, staying in your lane, essentially, but
right,
doing it really well. Yeah, that's your kind of what I see on Twitter. You'll oftentimes tweet out, I'm really glad to be doing the work I'm doing, and it has this, it just seems like you're very proud of the region that you're covering.
Yes,
you know, and that's so specific. You're not trying to get out of there and get a gig at the Boston Herald or whatever.
Yeah, people have always been very clear with me that I'm in Northern Rhode Island. That's where I live. That's where I work. That's the place I love. People ask me about something happening in like Southern Rhode Island. I have no idea because I cover Northern Rhode Island. So
yeah, and did you grow up in Rhode Island?
North Attleboro, so over the line. Yeah,
essentially. And then did you go to school around here?
For college?
Yeah.
In Pennsylvania. I went to school in Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Nice. Which one?
Clark Summit University.
Cool. And then made your way back to the Northeast proper?
Yep. Got married into Rhode Island, basically. My wife was a lifelong Smithfield resident. And so that's when 13 years ago was when I moved here.
That's awesome. Yeah, I get the paper generally once-ish a week, I find myself with a copy of it. What's the actual publication schedule? Because there's different
sections. We have two editions that come out on Wednesday and three that come out on Thursday. So Pawtucket and North Providence come out Wednesdays.
How is the reporting assignment handled? Or do you have people who are like, hey, look, I'm the Chepachet beat reporter, basically?
So each we trust our reporters to really embrace their communities and cover everything that happens. So I leave it up to them to find the stories. I do very little actual assigning. I write a lot of stories myself, but they have to cover schools, they have to cover politics, human interest, anything that comes up. It's on them to find it and not miss it. So
they're kind of like mini editors, mini assignment editors of themselves, you know.
And if you find good people, then that works well. So
yeah, that's a key to your operation. Is the team is obviously newspapers, news organizations, the personalities are, that's where the bread is won a lot of times. But you know, that seems critical to your operation.
We've always believed firmly in having a solid staff, and if you hire the wrong people, then the public is going to notice and not going to appreciate it very much. We have a high standard, so the interview process is tough, and we just we don't settle for mediocre.
In Northern Rhode Island, you've got WNRI. It's an AM, 1380 AM. Now they've got, 99.1 FM. They grew a bit as a statewide entity when DePietro, some people would say they grew a bit as a statewide entity when DePietro showed up there a couple of months ago, a year ago, whatever it was. But what else is going on in Northern Rhode Island? I mean, you have the Woonsocket radio station, WOON.
Yep.
But you're kind of,
coverage, you're the chief. I mean, you have the call in the Times, obviously, and some really good people there still working hard. But in terms of readership, we're the only ones at a lot of meetings, and we're covering things nobody else covers. TV stations are looking to our stories on Wednesday, and you see them cover it themselves at 6 o'clock. So it's nice to kind of drive that conversation and drive the narrative and the communities and people. It's destination. People have to, they meet us at the racks and on Thursdays, sometimes they're waiting for us. So,
I can attest to that, having seen the paper dropped off and then circling back like within hours and just noticing the bundle basically down to nothing.
Yeah.
And it's very real circulation, not just distribution. Two totally different things, right? Who actually picks it up?
It's all audited. You go to a Dave's Market, it gets loaded up multiple times and it's thousands of papers and it's like hotcakes. They come and get their groceries and they're there on Thursdays to get their groceries because that's when the paper comes out. So
now that we're in an era, years into an era where there's no more Providence Journal bureaus, like I grew up, there was the Westerly Bureau and all that. And, you know, even as the media has shifted in Rhode Island, you know, the Publix Radio just announced they're going to open a Newport Bureau and a South County Bureau in Westerly.
Yep.
That might put some pressure on whatever's left of the Westerly Sun and the New London paper. But, you know, you're not seeing that same activity in Northern Rhode Island. You're not seeing, you know, the Boston Globe and their push. You know, there's obviously a Providence-centric element to that, and then just kind of generally the towns of around. So you're sort of the bureau, the news bureau for Northern Rhode Island.
Right.
You know, it's a big responsibility.
Yeah, and we take it seriously. And if somebody comes in and wants to try competing, that's fine, because we feel very confident where we're at. And it would be tough for somebody to do that as well as we do. So we're fairly confident that we can keep going and being that leader.
Lieutenant Governor McKee was on here last week, and he brought up a stat that I think the eye test, for me anyway, kind of makes sense. I don't have numbers off the top of my head. I didn't make notes on it. But more or less, the northwestern portion of the state is in a steep decline in its GDP, and it's an aging population, whereas South County is seeing an increase in its GDP. It's seeing younger people move there. We see Providence obviously has fiscal problems, but you see a lot of young momentum, a lot of young energy. What's going on? What are the leaders of, from your perspective, the leaders, city leaders, civic leaders, people who are in media positions, what are they doing to attract economic development to the region that Sam Slater at one point made the world headquarters of economic development?
Well, it's actually Northern Rhode Island's the fastest growing by the recent estimates. And like, I live in Cumberland, and there are new young families coming in all the time. So I'm not sure, I don't know the statistics on how much it's aging, but there are a lot of young families, a lot of development happening. And with that, you see a lot of Pawtucket's doing really well with its developing new types of industries, brewing, the Hope Artis Village, a lot of high-end condos coming in.
Yep.
Cumberland is seeing a lot of growth. Woonsocket seems to be really on the rise. There was a recent consultant that came in and talked about Japatcha and the kind of the village feel there and how popular it is. So there seems to be a lot of growth in the small business sector. You hear about the big name losses like the Pawsox and potentially Hasbro. And I think people rightfully focus on those, but there's a lot going on locally with business development in the mills, especially. You look, a mill might look terrible from the outside in Pawtucket, but I have 200 businesses operating within the walls. So, and people are there on a consistent basis.
Yeah, the repurposing of the mill town, that's something that, you know, I've seen Level Exchange. That's a kind of a new artist hub. Yep. That's coming up in Pawtucket. I've been on Lincoln. There's a great studio called Big Nice Studio that's down. Yep. There, I mean, so you're seeing just even creative businesses. That's sort of a step in between a lot of times. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Between the I don't know, the mom and pop businesses or the right. industries of the future coming in and yep. abandoned properties or creative businesses. So is that something that Northern Rhode Island could serve as? The state could certainly use some more artists and creative housing.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. And doing it a smart way, not having all residential, having the live-work spaces. Pawtucket's really done a great job with that. You're starting to see the Hope Mill in Scituate's going to be redeveloped soon. I think that's mostly residential, if not all. Around the train station at the Central Falls Pawtucket line, there's a ton of interest in sort of mixed use, and that's right where that brewery and the Level Exchange is. So yeah, there are, I think, 5 mills right now under development in Pawtucket alone. So that is definitely a place for growth. Reusing old and vacant spaces is huge for Northern Rhode Island right now.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. And just, you know, you obviously don't want to fish or drink the water out of the Blackstone River now.
No.
But at the same time, it's a beautiful location and it can provide that, you know,
observational
aspect.
Oh yeah, the river
aspect.
Tours and the just the... the beauty of like all the birds that are coming back. Yeah, it was supposed to be fishable and swimmable, well, I think 2015. I never believed that was going to happen, but you probably don't want to touch the water still. Yeah. But yeah, it's a huge resource, and it's something a lot of companies are trying to take advantage of. Colette in Pawtucket really focused on the bike path and opening up that riverfront. I think that's one of the huge maybe shortfalls or shortcomings with elected leaders in Northern Rhode Island and maybe statewide, is just getting that bike path finished and taking advantage of that natural resource. And that's something that Dan Sullivan really emphasized with me recently in an interview with him with Colette and their expansion into the downtown. Is like, let's get this done. We've been talking about it for 15 years. Like, it's not a huge project.
It's not the Hyperloop. It's not Elon Musk's Hyperloop,
right,
you know?
Right.
Let's go.
There's some sections of it already developed, and there's space, and there's vacant properties. It shouldn't be trying to redevelop an entire town. It's just a bike path. Connect the two bike paths, so.
Yeah, it's an essential ingredient for sure.
Yeah.
You know, on a lot of levels, it makes sense, and it just needs to happen. I couldn't agree more. Talking about the train station, looking to the Central Falls Pawtucket train station that's in development, that could be a portal for tons of development in Rhode Island. Of course, the flip side of that concern, talking to Mayor Diosa in the past, Mayors Diosa, Grebe, and Lieutenant Governor McKee, is, you know, yeah, we want to attract people who would work in Boston or and potentially live in Rhode Island or even vice versa. You know, that might be a thing. but we can't, we have to be careful to not push out people who are already living in these parts of Northern Rhode Island, because that'll, one, it's wrong, but two, it'll just throw off the equation if we do so.
Yeah, there's a huge debate going on right now about the affordable housing, how much should be maintained, trying to create a mix of different types of people, income levels, things like that. You want the Wall Street types and the big bankers who are going to Boston also being mixed in with local firefighters or nurses, and that's a kind of a point of consideration. There's the one side where they don't want to chase off developers, but the opposite perspective is like, what developer is actually going to leave over a 10% requirement? So
yeah,
it's an interesting debate right now.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. Another major debate in your region is the gun sanctuary cities, you know, the Second Amendment sanctuary cities. That brought out a lot of passionate people. I mean, it echoed earlier the John Beauregard, anti-Nike, Colin Kaepernick, just sort of these essentially pointless resolutions that have so much passion behind them. You provided some outstanding coverage of that with your newspaper. That was one of my primary sources in looking at this. But now it's cooled off a little bit. And do you feel like it's coming back to reality where, you know, you're not going to have people walking around Burrillville with weapons, you know, walking into convenience stores and saying, whoa, we're in a gun sanctuary town. I can do whatever I want.
Right.
You know, people know what it means from your perspective.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was ever going to be people brandishing weapons and like boasting on the street corners. But you do... There was a certain, I think, even from gun owners and advocates for guns, just this kind of like, we don't want to be perceived a certain way. And that was where you saw some of the pushback and no votes on the sanctuary town, community, city votes. And, I mean, there's something to be said for that. Like, you don't want to sort of have everybody laughing at you from the outside. Not to say that everyone's going to laugh at a Burrillville, but... There was quite a bit of mockery on that topic.
Yeah, it just sort of reinforced some of the stereotypes. That's how I feel about it growing up in Charahoe. Now they got it going on in Richmond and Hopkinton. It's like, come on, guys. You know, that's, you can have that position, and you should have that position if it's yours, and you should be as vocal about it as you want. But, you know, don't make up a designation that now pigeonholes the entire community. It's not even so much the specifics of what it is. It's just that you would operate in such a way of passing non-binding resolutions.
Was it was it Tiverton that recently voted it
yesterday? I think it was, or 2 days ago. They tried to
a close vote. So that kind of shows, like, even from people who support gun rights, it's like maybe we don't have to take this step. So
I totally agree. That was, and there was a lot of pushback. Justin Katz, you know, he put out a piece that was kind of calling almost for a revolution in a way. I mean, when you read through the piece and you said, hold on a second, man, hit the brakes. You know, what are we actually debating here? Is that really what you want Tiverton to be known as? Is that what Burrillville should be known as? I mean, or should it be known as a place that, you know, there are a lot of gun rights advocates living there and firing at the ranges there, and that's not the issue, you know. How do you want to brand yourself, I guess? It's a major question that we'll see where it goes.
Yep.
Distribution of the newspaper for you, I mean, you're out there. I saw on Twitter one time you were cutting bundles open and leaving them. I do that with Motif. I said that the other day on Matt Allen's podcast, and someone was like, wow, I can't believe you do that. I was like, that's, we make, and I'll say it right now, you make more money to deliver the paper than you do to write an article that you spent all week interviewing. Yeah. And that's kind of sad, but it's necessary.
Yeah, it's not quite that for me, but
that's good.
It is good money, and it's something I enjoy. It's the people I get to meet and the exercise a little bit when I'm working a lot of hours and having trouble getting that exercise. It's just fun. You get up early in the morning, grab a coffee, and run. And seeing people's excitement and having them feed you tips on stories. For me, I've been doing it for seven or eight years, and it's something that's just become part of the job. Really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Where do you go? Honeydew? Is that the...
Oh, yeah. Honeydew all day.
The Northern Rhode Island choice.
Chapel Four Corners is my go-to because of the donuts. They make them right there. So
nice. What do people who live in Providence, South County, Newport, whatever it is in the region, we'll say, not even just in the state, what are they missing when it comes to Northern Rhode Island? Is there anything that's, you know...
Yeah, I think people sort of... focus on the beaches a lot with Rhode Island. I mean, you expect that. But we really do have a great place. Like, I love exploring, whether it's a mill or whether it's the Great Woods. We have thousands of miles of trails in just in Cumberland alone. So the natural resources, the river, the gorge, the Blackstone Gorge is amazing. Kayaking on the Blackstone River. Some of the tourism things that might get overlooked. Slater Mill, I was there again with my kids recently. The breweries, there's huge growth in breweries in Northern Rhode Island. People think of Pawtucket, but you have North Providence, Woonsocket's getting a new brewery. I believe Cumberland, Jason Mancari, that's another mill redevelopment. He's working on bringing in another brewer. So I'm sure I'm missing some there.
Yeah,
most of them are centered in Pawtucket, but breweries are huge right now. It's a huge. I had a cousin in Colorado who sent me a message asking me about Rhode Island's breweries, and he had heard it through the grapevine. It wasn't through my reporting or anything. He's like, I want to come out and check it out, and that's far away.
Yeah, that's far away.
It's become a big deal.
Yeah, it's not just the governor and her campaign ad chugging right. The beer there.
Yeah, I don't know if chugging is the right word, but
you ever encounter the rattlesnakes on Diamond Hill? That's something I've always wanted to encounter. Is that a real thing that they've got rattlesnakes in Cumberland?
I don't believe so.
Okay,
I've heard a lot about it, but I've never encountered them.
It's not happening.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Educationally, right now, there's people who are vocal. That Woonsocket in particular is struggling, and it doesn't get the attention that Providence does as far as being, or Central Falls does or did, when it comes to an urban core school that's having problems. You know, because it's nestled in Northern Rhode Island, I think Woonsocket sometimes will get left out of that conversation. From from the media's perspective, how do you assess this? I mean, you can't just rip the school department every day. Got to put pressure on too.
Yeah, I think there's maybe a false perception about these schools from outside of just all those kids from Tolman. They just stink. Every year I ask the valedictorian, salutatorian at Tolman and Shea, it's like, what is the biggest misperception about you guys? And they're like, people think we're horrible. And where a lot of us are first generation, our parents didn't even go to high school, never mind college, and we're about to go to a big-time school. So just almost the holding, I don't want to say all kids shouldn't be held to the same standard, but you do have that difference in a kid who's had a family, grandparents who went to college, and a great upbringing, and have lived here for their whole lives, and someone who might have moved here as a 9-year-old and had to learn the language. And I think there's a lot of nuance within education that people miss, because it's just like, yeah, their test scores are horrible. And yes, we need to get all kids to a good place educationally. But I think there's more to the conversation, especially in Woonsocket, Central Falls, some of the urban communities.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's not only a language issue. I mean, it's just an approach issue, I think, that something's not quite right. And then that's why you're seeing the results that we're seeing in the RICAS, or, you know, just that sort of, like you say, the anecdotal random person on the street. What do you think of Tolman? Oh, yeah, it's a dump, you know. That's probably a fair point that they're making.
At the same point, you've had a raising of the standard out of Tolman, and there has been, like, a Blackstone Valley Prep is showing that it's not just where you're from. I think Patty DeCenzo, she's leaving Pawtucket, but she's done a really good job of saying, hey, we need to do better, and we need to make sure these kids have the same resources. When Tolman, Chris Savastano first took over there, they weren't even having a prom. They didn't have a lot of the things that kids even wanted to come to school for. And he would say, hey, we need to restore this stuff and bring pride back to our school. And so I think it's on staff in these schools to treat all kids equally and not just see it as, oh, those urban kids, I'm going to just put in my time today. And maybe some of the charter schools have driven that conversation a little bit and helped improve. I know Patty DeCenzo has cited the charter schools for driving improvement in Pawtucket and said, hey, we need to be better. And they've improved dramatically. You can't argue with a 60% to 80-something percent graduation rate.
Yeah, that's huge. Yeah. No question about it. Last couple of minutes, your license plate, journalism. You got ink in your blood.
Yeah.
So,
journalism without the vowels. I got it last year. It was something I always wanted. I just wanted to sort of make a bigger statement than I've made repeatedly. I joke on Twitter to public officials, don't even reach out to me about a job. I'm not interested in PR. I'm not interested in government spokesman for anything. This is where I'm at. It's what I've wanted to do since I was 11. And I see it as important. And I think we can be a leader in the country in sort of saving, I don't want to be too dramatic, but saving local news. We need to have models that work, and sort of allowing it to die is not an option. So I want people to know. And I go a lot of places, Dave's Market, for instance, and I check the papers there, and people are like, journalism, that's awesome. So it's kind of cool to see. I've gotten a couple, I've been flipped off a few times about it, but for the most part, people are pretty excited to see my license plate.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's just like, I'm all in on this. Yeah. And it's interesting. A lot of people, it seems like that's the pathway, not for everyone, but there's a clear pathway. You work at an outlet in the area for 2 years, 3 years, maybe 4 years, maybe become a spokesperson for a state office holder or something of that nature, and then go make three times as much, about twice as much money. And then that pathway is, it's leaving a lot of talent outside of the fourth branch of government.
Yeah, I've never seen this. I've never seen it as a stepping stone. It's what I do. If I make less, so be it. I'll make it work financially for my family. And I've been able to, thankfully, been able to do that by delivering papers and by getting promoted a few times. And so it's just, if you work hard and do the right thing, you can make a profession work. And that's kind of how I've lived my life for the past 13 years. So.
Last question. Biggest issue facing Rhode Island right now in your mind, what is it?
I think it's just figuring out what we want to be and making it happen. And I think we talk and talk and talk about how to develop the 195 land or whether we should keep the PawSox or not. And I think at a certain point, you just have to say, forget the politics of this or whether I might get elected next time. I'm going to do the right thing for the state. And I don't want to say too much, but I think sometimes that's lacking. And we don't have leaders either locally or statewide who always have that in mind. Like, I'm just going to do this because it's the right thing for my community. And sometimes you'll see it. And sometimes you'll have competing forces that where you'll have it on one side and not the other, and it will ruin a good goal or a good project. I don't think it's a secret that Rhode Island gets in its own way, and we need to just become like some of these other states that are just saying, hey, I went to a thing in Pawtucket about this consultant who had some really good points. It's like, get some activity in your downtown. I don't care if it's a children's play place or chess tables. It's like, the activity comes, people will come. But right now, it's sort of an afterthought sometimes, and somebody else will do it. And people just need to do. Somebody needs to say, hey, I'm going to bring the chess tables into downtown. So I think doing instead of talking might be our biggest hang up right now.
Ethan Shorey, The Valley Breeze, pick it up, depending on where you are, every Wednesday and Thursday, depending on where you are in Northern Rhode Island, and everyone in the state should add it to your lexicon, your content consumption to get the best perspective that you can get on that part of the state. No question about it in my mind. So
thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, real pleasure. Other newspapers in the state that are faltering, disappearing, it'll be interesting to see how they look to the Valley Breeze as a model for how to connect with the community, connect with advertisers in a specific way that's not just a random flyer in the paper. It's like, it's all one organic beast, that
paper. Yeah, I'm happy to talk to anybody who has questions about how they can sort of improve their product. I don't have all the answers, but I'm happy to chat anytime. My office is always open.
And so is mine, Bill at ripodcast.com. If you want to say hello, if you're interested in becoming a supporter, or if you'd like to send a confidential story idea. Until next time, I'm Bill Bartholomew. We'll talk soon.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.